Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Now, what you're hearing about immigration from the campaigns and what is true.
This election is all about vision. One candidate sees a Minnesota where we all lose our health insurance, forced onto one government plan, where we become a sanctuary state for illegal immigrants, and where we all pay even higher.
Jeff Johnson crams a lot of issues into that television ad, attacking his DFL opponent Tim Walz, but he made sure he included immigration because he's seen polling that says Republicans put it at the top of their midterm concerns. What do Minnesota voters, particularly Republicans, want from their elected leaders on the issue, especially since Congress has failed to pass immigration reform for decades? And especially since Minnesota's own immigrant population is growing. So two guests and your thoughts on this as well. I'd like to hear from Republican and independent voters this morning about what you want on immigration from the candidates that you support. What do you really put aside a lot of the inflammatory campaign rhetoric on immigration? What is it you particularly want from the candidates here in Minnesota and beyond? Be specific. Just talking about border security isn't going to get us very far. So I'd like to know specifically what you're interested in. Calling on independent voters and Republican voters this morning, and for everyone, think about what happens after the election on immigration. Okay, here's the phone number. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, at Kerry, K-E-R-R-I, M-P-R. Alan Gomez is with us. He's a reporter for USA Today, where he writes about immigration policy, and he's in Miami. And Alan, welcome back to the show. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me.
Andy Iocchi is with us. He's the chair of the Political Science Department at Augsburg University and in the studio with me. Welcome, Andy. Good to have you here. Let's get the microphone turned on there for Andy. So, Andy, immigration surpasses jobs and the economy when Minnesota Republicans are asked about their top issue. Why? I mean, is this a particularly urgent issue inside Minnesota, or are they echoing some of the debate happening nationwide?
I think it's more the latter. And in part, there's no burning issue right now. The economy is doing very well. There's some other problems, obviously, but they really haven't caught the attention of voters. So immigration just kind of bubbles up by default.
What do you think, Alan, is happening with this latest news that's put this front and center, and that's the migrant caravan? Do you have a sense, as you talk to voters and you write about the policy, about how that's influencing the way voters are seeing this?
Yeah, I mean, the issue obviously just rises to the top when things are, when, as Andy was just mentioning, but at the same time, the president talking about this every single day and tweeting about this every single day is having a profound effect. You know, in Minnesota, I've been looking at congressional debates around the country, and including Minnesota, and it's amazing how many immigration questions there are in places that are so far from the southern border. You know, I was listening to the second district congressional race between Republican Representative Jason Lewis and Democrat there, Angie Craig.
Right.
And the first 11 questions out of the box were about immigration in one of their debates. And that's one of the things that's been surprising me as I've looked around the country is how much it's become an issue as this caravan has been moving forward and as those images have been flashed across our TV screens for these last couple of weeks.
It's a really good point, and we have some sound from our gubernatorial debate on this. Tim Walz and Jeff Johnson. And this is focused on the idea of sanctuary states. So, you know, whether this is really going to affect the way either one of them as governors would govern Minnesota, let's listen to how they're thinking about that in terms of immigration.
The United States will not be a migrant camp.
I'm sorry, that's not the tape. We're looking for the Tim Walz, Jeff Johnson sound from a debate at KSTP. Here it is.
And right now we have a lot of questions. So we want to end our participation, at least for now, until we figure this out.
Minnesota's past, Minnesota's present, and Minnesota's future is dependent on immigration. It is dependent on us being seen as a place where you can not just find refuge from war and terror, but you can go through the process to get here and live the American dream.
So, Andy, as you listen to that, do you think it kind of defines the two positions of the voters that both of these candidates are trying to attract?
It certainly gives them a choice, and I don't think it's too hard to distinguish the positions. I think there's still not a lot of voters who are going to decide based on that because a lot of people—
There are not, or there are?
Are not.
There are not.
Trump is really the central issue for many voters, but for a small number, this certainly may make a difference.
And yet the president is talking a lot about immigration. So when you say Trump is the central issue, how does immigration factor into that, given the fact that the president talks about it a lot?
Well, it makes it clear his position. I think people already knew that, but they're trying to activate a certain number of people who may have been sitting on their hands and apathetic up until now, and they're hoping that this will motivate them to turn out and obviously vote Republican.
Alan, what'd you hear in that just snippet of this debate?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's that idea that sanctuary cities in Minnesota, right? It's not, you don't have that many undocumented immigrants in Minnesota. It's about 100,000 undocumented immigrants in the state. That's less than 1% of the total population of undocumented around the country. And yet that's something that they feel that they need to get into and they feel is such a threat, or at least one of the candidates thinks it is. And to Andy's point, I mean, the idea of trying to use this issue as a way to rally the base, Trump is basically taking a page out of his 2016 presidential campaign book. And he knows it works. He knows it riles up his base. He knows those are the voters that they need to get out there. So this migrant caravan, the timing of it is just they're doing it now because this is when they usually do it. It's mm-hmm. after the summer. It's mm-hmm. when it's a little bit easier for them to make that large walk, that very long walk. But the timing of it is good for the Republicans because it gives them those images. It lets people sit there every day and watch conservative media and watch those images every single day of this brown mass of people heading north, trying to invade the country. And just to be clear, this is the terminology that Republicans are using on the stump and using in debates. And so that's what they're trying to do. And they're really trying to get those folks up and get them voting next in a couple of weeks.
Andy, I guess what's predictable but disappointing is how rarely actual specifics about immigration policy end up in these debates, inflamed again by the images that you and Alan are talking about. I want voters to demand more specifics about these policies, and yet we often don't. Why?
Well, you know, to be honest, specifics can get boring, and they don't fit into little one-liners and bumper stickers very well. So,
yeah.
Unfortunately, that's where our elections have gone.
But I want our voters to demand this from the candidate. All right, let me go to the phones here to Jeremy in Anoka. Hi, Jeremy. You're an independent. Is that right?
Yeah, there are issues on both sides that I agree and disagree with.
Okay. So, how are you hearing the immigration discussion?
All right. Well, to Alan's point, I agree that there seems to be, at least from the Republican side, this sort of painting this picture of this horde of brown-skinned people slowly moving its way to, you know, penetrate the border of our sacred country. And I think that, I mean, I'm a blue-collar father of two, and, you know, I'm 42 years old, and I feel like that's the audience that a lot of the Republican message is trying to target.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm supposed to feel somehow afraid of this, but I don't. I think the overwhelming thing on that side is that there's some sort of impending menace. But what was the statistic? Less than 1% of the entire undocumented immigrant population
in Minnesota. Yeah, that's
yeah,
Alan
so
brought us
once
in.
Once you hear that fact, I mean, and you start thinking about it, that it doesn't. It's so minuscule. I will say though, there's a reason so many people are coming up, and it's because there are so many programs and so many, I don't want to call them handouts, but in one way, that's how some people phrase them, that are available. I mean,
Jeremy, I think we're going a little far afield here, and this is part of what I will talk about tomorrow morning at 9. But you said something important there, which is, and I think it's something that Andy referenced earlier, as one of the targeted voters, right? A white male, father of two, blue collar work, I think you described. This kind of rhetoric, and Alan, step in here, is designed to activate, but let's be honest, not really inform a voter like Jeremy. Is that right?
I believe so, because it's, you know, if you look at this caravan, for example, the president has tweeted nonstop about it. He's talked about it quite a bit, and a lot of people in the Republican Party have been doing the same thing, but never have they mentioned the fact that what they're doing, they're not trying to illegally cross the border. If you're trying to illegally cross the border, you're not going to form a huge group,
right,
invite reporters to walk along with you, provide Facebook updates on your progress. What they're trying to do is reach our ports of entry to apply for asylum. That is something that is allowed in our U.S. law and the international conventions that we're party to. And so they don't mention that part. I mean, if we want to talk about the issue with the caravans is what our asylum laws are like. Do we have enough judges to adjudicate the cases? That's what should be discussed in this. But no, they mask it in this idea of there's this horde coming up. Now the president is throwing in the idea that there's, quote unquote, Middle Easterners in there, as if that in and of itself is a threat. And so when you put those together, it's very clear that their intention is not to in any way educate, it's to scare.
So, Andy, you're a political scientist. Why are those tactics so effective, given what Alan has just said about the debate ought to be around political asylum laws or legal immigration or what we're going to do about the people who are undocumented? But why is it so effective to play it the way it's being played?
Well, I think one key is it's targeted at certain people, people who are going to hear reinforcing messages on conservative social media and websites. And so it's not really intended to reach out to the vast majority of voters who right now have a fairly positive view of immigration. It's trying to reach
this one. Right, in national polling, right? Yeah.
This one niche. And so for them, the belief is it's going to be effective, and providing more information really isn't productive for what they want to do.
Call here from Rosendo in Moundsview. Hi, thanks so much for waiting.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. Uh-huh.
So, myself, I am undocumented.
Mm-hmm.
For the reason for my call is that I come to this country in 1998. So, I never qualified for anything from government. For me and my wife and my daughter, we come together. We live without insurance. We never had it because every time we used to try, like when we got here, because the people tell us you should do that, you should try it. When we go, we never qualified for it. They said immigrants doesn't pay taxes. They constitute a burden to the country, which is not true. This is a myth that the right wing creates because they, for some reason, and they start repeating that, and lots of people start saying that, especially the lawmakers start saying that, and when they said that, the other people who don't know, who doesn't make any resources, they start believe that, and now lots of people saying that.
That undocumented people do not pay taxes. Can I ask you a question? That the answer is often, well, it's so unfair to the people that want to come in legally. Why don't you go back and get in the line? What is your answer to that?
I live in extremely poverty in my country.
Mm-hmm.
I have my sister which is U.S. citizen to wait for her to file for me. I have to wait 20 years or a little bit less to depend in lots of things. Wait that I'll die. If I have a chance to come here to have a better life, I will try. That's it.
You're saying if you had to do it legally, it would take a very long time now that you've been in the country
exactly,
this long.
Exactly. Right. And they have no interest to make it easy legally because for many of them are scared of voting. They think some days they're going to vote, and the way they damage their image through the immigrants, they know the immigrants, they think that some immigrants are not going to vote for them or whatever. But I pay my taxes when I work for a company because they take the taxes straight from my check.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am self-employed. I pay my taxes every quarter. For 20 years, 15 years, I haven't gone to the doctor. My wife has been going to the doctor for 8 years because we can't afford to go. When we have a problem, we go to Walmart, we buy what we think could help us. That's why we survive.
Rosenda, and if I might, I really appreciate the call. You've said a lot, and I don't want to miss it. Alan, I want to come back to you. You know, there is a lot of the misinformation correcting, but often I think those facts get buried under the kind of campaign rhetoric and the stuff that President Trump says about immigrants. And I don't know why the facts don't prevail.
Yeah, and it's interesting. The previous caller, Jeremy, sounded like he was a very intelligent, well-reasoned, understanding person who was willing to look at several sides of this. And then at the end, he kind of mentioned the idea that, but they want to come here for the benefits.
Right.
As you heard from Rosendo, undocumented immigrants, it's not like there's this wide variety of benefits that they can receive. As he's mentioning, you don't get health care in certain extreme cases if you're about to give birth. If you have to go to an emergency room, yes, you can get treatment. But it's again, as you heard from him, you're not getting regular checkups. You're not getting regular prescription. It's only extreme things that you receive. That other point that he mentions, that they're just a drain on the economy. Undocumented immigrants pay federal taxes. They pay into our Social Security system. They pay into our Medicare system, but they cannot receive anything from it because of their undocumented status. And so this has always been a really big challenge when you're trying to paint the economic picture of illegal immigration, where on the one hand, yes, they do use services. There's no doubt about it. They go to schools. Their children go to schools. They receive some medical benefits in extreme situations, but they also pay in quite a bit. I'm sure if Rosendo's living here, he's paying rent. He's buying things at his local stores. And so that balance of trying to figure out what the real costs and benefits of immigration to begin with, and specifically illegal immigration, is hard enough to have between economists. But as Andy mentioned earlier, it doesn't quite fit on a bumper sticker. So it makes it very difficult to have a well-reasoned debate on that.
A conversation this morning, if you've just gotten in on it, with Alan Gomez from USA Today and Andy Aoki from the Political Science Department at Augsburg University, taking a look at some of what Minnesota candidates are saying about immigration and national candidates, and then the national rhetoric from President Trump on immigration, and trying to apply some of the facts that often get subsumed by the political rhetoric, but also to try to understand how voters are thinking about this. And this is where you come in. As a Republican voter, as an independent voter, I'd like to know what you want to hear from the candidates, the real facts, the real policy thinking on immigration. Be specific. Talk to me about more than just border security. What are you looking for when it comes to problem solving and concerns about immigration? 651-227-6000. I'm on Twitter at @CarrieMPR, where Gordon says ultimately the U.S. is going to have to reconcile the fact that we already have a population of 320 million people with the reality that we can't maintain high immigration levels indefinitely while preserving our open spaces, quality of life, and tackling climate change. Janie says, I want truth about immigration. I want candidates to consider how this financially affects our state and nation. I'm all for being caring and generous, but our current laws need to be followed. The government's main job is to maintain security and order. Andy, can I ask you what you hear in a couple of those somewhat contrasting views?
Well, I think there's some very reasonable questions. The last one about costs, we really need to have a debate, because when economists have looked at the evidence, they found some interesting things. At the national level, immigrants are probably a net positive, but at the state and local level, they may be a net negative because the heavy services they use are things like education. And so we need to have these kind of debates. Should there be some transfer funds to make up for the cost of the state and local level? And so the things they're asking, I think, are very sensible.
So when you say we would see different implication of costs statewide or community-wide, again, that would be because you are using services that are funded by the state taxpayers in a way that you're not by the way we pay our national federal taxes.
Yes, exactly. And of course, they don't qualify often for many federal benefits.
Right.
And so the feds may come off ahead, and states, at least heavy immigrant states such as California, may come off a little behind. And so there really are these kinds of discussions that should happen, and they're getting drowned out by this emotional rhetoric.
Alan, I know I've talked to you about this before. Why Congress kicks the can on this over and over again, and then the line is always, well, after the next midterm or after the next presidential, and it doesn't happen. Have you essentially given up on a serious effort for immigration reform from Congress?
I never want to say I've completely given up, because I like to think myself a bit of an optimist. But mm-hmm. when you look at the current makeup of Congress and just the recent history in Congress, any chance of this happening is of a broad immigration reform package that really overhauls the things that are needed. I just don't see how it happens. I mean, the last time we got close was in 2013 when the Senate passed a bipartisan immigration bill that affected all these things that we're talking about still, border security, guest worker programs, worker verification, a lot of the economic issues that we're talking about here. But the House didn't even take it up and didn't even propose their own solution. And so ever since, what we see is the occasional effort to talk about immigration in Congress. Right now, we're going to have a debate after the election at some point when it comes to the 800,000 or so Dreamers mm-hmm. Who the president is trying to end the DACA program. So they'll be forced to have that. But that's going to be very difficult, because in exchange for protecting those Dreamers, Republicans have already made clear that they're going to demand their entire laundry list of things that they want: border security, worksite enforcement, all these things. So it's going to be difficult. It's going to be ugly. But I just don't see how, especially if one of the chambers of Congress flips, I don't see how they reach that resolution. That's going to be very, very difficult.
Here's an indication of how Minnesota candidates are talking about this issue of immigration. This is from a first district debate between Jim Hagedorn and Dan Feehan. Here they are arguing about the idea of immigration policy.
If our entire focus is spent on the idea of the wall, we are going to miss things that are.
Well, sorry about that. It appears something happened to the tape. We'll try to cue that up again. Let's see if we can hear Jim Hagedorn on that, can we? Or maybe we're having. All right, we'll go on to a call. All right, to Nancy in Edina. Hey, Nancy, hi. Thanks so much for waiting. Nancy, are you there? Hi. What'd you want to say? You're an independent, is that right?
I am an independent, yes. What I wanted to say is I just think that we need to have a better vetting system in general. And I know it sounds kind of broad term, but I think that, you know, if we look at some of the other countries like Canada and some of the other European countries who kind of try to have it more job-specific uh-huh. for people who are coming in, I know a system like that also takes great, you know, changes or, you know, probably expansion on departments and employment, and maybe we don't have a system-wide, you know, access to doing something like that. But I think that if we, you know, did a better vetting system to having mm-hmm. people come in here and more job-specific.
Got it.
And that could be of, you know, anywhere from, you know, low-income jobs or high-income jobs. I think it would help, you know, people who are in the United States feel a little more comfortable because,
okay.
you know, with us being here, we also struggle ourselves. And so I think, you know, with us looking at the whole picture, that might be helpful.
Okay,
you know,
this is a good question. Merit-based, but I also, Alan, I hear Nancy saying that doesn't mean that Microsoft gets to bring in all the computer scientists and people at the lower end of the economic scale don't get in. How does it work now?
Yeah, right now the majority of people who are given green cards by the U.S., we give about 1 million green cards a year, about 60 to 70% of them are based on your relations to your – it's family-based migration, so who you're related to. And the remainder are divvied up between asylums, refugees, and economic-based visas. The president and a lot of others are pushing for a transition to that more merit-based system where you flip it, where the majority of visas would be given to people based on their education, their work experience, their ability to contribute to the U.S. economy, and mirroring systems like Canada and Australia. That caller was, you know, laid it out perfectly. I thought, you know, that's the kind of discussion I'd love to have more often when it comes to this. But when that drops into the political discourse, all of a sudden family-based migration, which this nation has used for the entirety of its history, is referred to as chain migration.
That's something that President Trump, that term, yes.
Exactly. And so that's the, like, that's the problem of them. They can't just have that debate, and it's a good debate to have, and it's one that I think we should have. But it turns into the name calling, and it turns into things like chain migration that just try to connote something negative when really it's just family-based migration and what we've been doing for generations.
Andy, I think the other part of that is it becomes an either-or. We can either do this or we can do this, including President Trump wanting to limit legal immigration. I'm not sure. I guess that's, again, the simplifying, as you say, down to the bumper sticker. I'm not sure why we are not having the more nuanced debate about some of these solutions that callers are suggesting.
Yes, it is a complicated debate, and it deserves to have a better discussion. Again, it gets lost in political rhetoric, but the callers are really raising, I think, very good points and ones that deserve more attention. The proper balance between family reunification visas and needed skills visas, that's a valid question and deserves to be discussed. It's obviously getting no attention right now.
So, Alan, as far as just on that point of Andy's, has the United States ever found a good way to balance that, or this is uncharted territory in U.S. Immigration policy?
I mean, it's not to get into the full history of how we've given out visas, but our immigration system right now is the basis of it is over 50 years old, and so that idea of bringing in the majority of people based on relations, that was just kind of ingrained in our system. That's how it was. That's how it's gone along. We've done some tweaks over the years, created some guest worker programs, removed some guest worker programs. But that opportunity to sit and have that discussion just hasn't materialized because of everything that we're talking about today. Because every time you try to have this debate, it devolves into questions of border security and what we're seeing right now with the caravan. And this is probably the most extreme example that I've seen in my many years covering immigration of this issue being
really
so politicized and so polarized.
Really?
But that economic argument has been a difficult one to have over the years.
Sonny says on Twitter, I would like candidates to talk about solutions for the global migrant crisis. We should be taking more refugees than we are. But if people really want this problem to go away, we have to talk about this clearly. We can't hide behind a wall. To the phones, to Eric in Chaska. Hi, Eric. How do you come at this? Hey, Eric, are you there? Your phone might have dropped off. I'm going to move on to Aaron, but Eric, call us back. Hi, Aaron. Thanks very much for waiting. What are you saying about this?
Oh, hello.
Hi. Go right ahead.
All right. Well, what I'm looking at and see is largely just a lot of anecdotal knowledge from working in public service and knowing a lot of immigrants that have come here legally.
Uh-huh.
And then just dealing with the bureaucracy of the U.S. immigration officials has somehow managed to either lose their immigration status or their jobs because they're trying to deal with it. I mean, if you thought going to the DMV was bad, go stand in an immigration line down in Bloomington.
Good point. The process,
really,
right.
What I would like to see from our candidates in this election is to drop this idea of sanctuary cities, which is absolutely ridiculous, and including and I'll hit the other side, too, and trying to push for more border security. That's not going to solve our problem. What's going to solve our problem, I think, is pressure from our state officials to the federal or to the federal level of, hey, you guys need to get your act together and figure out how to make this process actually work for people so that we don't have people that are here legally losing their status and then all of a sudden they're here 20 years. They have a life set up, and they can't be here anymore.
Yeah, Aaron, this is a good point, and I want to put it to Alan and Andy. Is that where you think, Andy, the effective pressure can come from, to the top?
It certainly is something you can try. The reality is that a lot of these state and local efforts, sanctuary cities or some cities, have tried to crack down in either direction. They're doing it because Congress has failed. So in a sense, it's a response to the failure of Congress to come up with a better solution.
Alan? You were going to say, Alan? Okay, to the phones, to we might have lost that line. Well, having all kinds of technical issues here. To Najat in Maplewood. Hi, Najat, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hey, good. I'm glad you're there. What do you want to say about this?
Actually, I wanted to say that I am a refugee once in 1998 when my family was being prosecuted for who they are in Ethiopia. And the United States stood up for my family and for other families during that time and, you know, all throughout the 90s to rescue us from that horror. And so this whole debate about what immigrants can bring and can't bring into this country, there is something else that's being lost, I feel like, which is the moral, United States moral standing in the world. It's something that we looked up to from other countries when our own government are going after our lives. And not everybody's here to chase after economic dreams. Some of us are here to find peace. And peace is not something that you could get when your own government is violent towards you. So where is that going to fit in all of this debate?
Well,
and if you look at my family and my community, we contribute immensely into our communities and into our country here. And that I don't hear that a lot anymore.
Najat,
I want to give
Alan a chance to respond to this because it's such a good point. I'm really glad for the call. And Alan, I think we saw an example of what Najat is describing in the child separation issue. Because you think about the way Americans reacted to that. That's a moment when the humanity of this broke through a lot of the same old campaign rhetoric. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's really stunning to me what resonates and what does not.
I know.
To give you just a quick data point here, the number of refugees that have been accepted by the United States has gone from 84,000 3 years ago to 53,000 2 years ago to 22,000 last year, the first full fiscal year of the Trump presidency. And they want to continue reducing it. They want to make a historic low of the number of refugees that we admit into the country. They're trying to limit the ability of people to come in here and seek asylum. You hear all these things and you see what's happening, but those don't really capture it. But somehow that family separation crisis along the border is something that I heard from so many Republicans, so many Trump supporters saying, wow, that's the step too far. That's what I can't condone. And so it's, I don't know if it's just that visceral image or that idea of a mother being separated from a child like that. I don't know what it was about it, but it's fascinating how that was the thing that really struck a lot of people. And I can tell you, I'm hearing a lot about in these days leading up to the election as we talk to folks, it's something that unprompted people bring it up quite a bit.
Alan or Andy, what do you make of that? I've got about 30 seconds left.
Well, you know, when Najat was speaking, and I think she made a very good point, it brought up Ronald Reagan's image of America. He always said he saw it as that shining city on the hill, quoting the Puritans. And that's really been lost. And I think that's what these voices help remind us of, those important moral issues.
Good to have you on the show, Andy. Thanks much. Alan, always good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Alan Gomez with us from USA Today. Andy Aoki from Augsburg University tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. We talk about the facts, not the campaign rhetoric, about the migrant caravan headed north. I hope you'll tune in.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828. Or tweet Carrie at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.